Hi everyone, and welcome to another weekly update. I thought it was kind of interesting the last few weeks we saw the biggest sell-off we've seen since November last year. The sell-off last year started mid of the year, kind of July, August, and then went to November. And basically what happened is the algos and vol targeting funds flipped max short. Then very shortly after a few good results, flipped max long, where they've basically been sitting for most of this year. An interesting aspect of markets is that most of the time shares don't change hands. You know, with all the big sell-offs and big rallies, most of the time company stock is held by the same people. It's really the people at the margins that move. You know, the pod shops that trade huge volumes on earnings and momentum funds and vol targeting funds. And the momentum and vol targeting funds are interesting to watch because it's very transparent in what they do. So the vol targeting funds are firms like Bridgewater, with Ray Dalio. Effectively, as volatility goes up, they reduce their equity exposure. When volatility comes down, they bring it back up. And the reason that works so well is that volatility tends to cost up. So if you have periods of very high volatility, that's generally during market sell-offs, which can last for months or years. And similarly, rallies, which can be very extended, tend to be characterized by very low volatility regimes for extended periods. So these funds increase their exposure in those periods and decreases it in high vol periods. So after two big down days in the last couple of weeks, all those vol targeting funds, which manage hundreds of billions, probably trillions of dollars, will have had to cut their exposure. Similarly, you can see on just by inspection that the momentum funds, which also manage a huge amount of money, CTAs, and a huge amount of liquid money that actually changes positions relatively frequently, the first momentum sell signals would have been given in the last few days as a few key levels were lost. That's kind of like the broader picture of where we are. I think part of that move will have already happened, but we're still a long way from these algorithmic styles going from max long to max short, which is where you get these huge rallies. You can see that in the performance of the different sectors. You can see ARK down 17, cloud computing down 9, biotech down 4, small caps negative 3, NASDAQ and S&P up 5, 6%. And obviously semis have stayed strong, which has really helped us because that's our biggest single sector weighting at the moment. We had a really interesting chat with a chief architect at Microsoft, and I thought it'd be worth sharing the key learnings that we had. He said that Microsoft is sitting on about 192 data centers at the moment. Now in 2019, they had a 10-year plan to increase the number of data centers by 100. They're now doing over 100 a year, and the actual plan is to go from 192 to 800 by 2028, which isn't, sadly, that far away anymore. So that's a huge CapEx spend. It's probably one of the biggest CapEx rollouts. And for the other hyperscalers, for the Googles, the Amazons, the AWS, their competitors, to maintain market share, they're going to have to be doing something similar. So you're looking at 3 to 4x increase in compute over the next 4 years, say, 4 to 5 years. And that's matching other industry touch points where, for example, Europe is planning in the EU to quintuple, so 5x their data center capacity by 2030. So this is enormous. This spend hasn't come, and it's coming over the next few years. And a vast bulk of it will go through the semiconductor supply chain, which has immense investment consequences. I think in the last cycle, the best performing index was software. And it's pretty clear that semiconductors are the software of this particular regime. Ultimately, this is driven by demand. This isn't driven by investors. It's not like kind of the SPAC boom where there was immense investor demand, but not so much demand for whatever those companies were doing, which is why so many of them have gone to zero since. To give a few touch points, he said they're building a data center every 3 days. So it doesn't take 3 days to build a data center, obviously, but a new one is spun up every 3 days, costing roughly $500 million to do back of envelope. He's saying when they spin one of these up, they're operating at full capacity within 3 to 5 hours. So there's huge customer demand for this. We're kind of worried after NVIDIA's big day where they announced their next generation and AMD will soon announce their next generation, we're kind of worried. It's like, wow, these things are actually so much better than the prior generation. What does that mean? Does that mean like last year's are worth 50, 60, 70% less or more? You know, is the depreciation here not 20% a year on a 5-year schedule or 10% on a 10-year schedule? It's probably more on the shorter end. Is the depreciation schedule, like, should it be a year? Are these things like significantly less, or 2 or 3 years? Are these things dropping in value that fast? He basically said we couldn't get him down on what the actual returns were on that CapEx. We were saying they're returning their investment within a year. So if you bought a $41,000, $42,000 latest gen state-of-the-art chip from NVIDIA. Obviously, Microsoft doesn't pay the full freight and then rents it out. You know, they'll expect to make at least 40,000 within a year. So this is driven by immense customer demand and exceptionally high returns on investment on this CapEx expenditure. And you think about how that flows through the supply chain, you know, everybody takes their cut. So a lot of that revenue ends up as profit for somebody. Let's say, you know, NVIDIA takes their large margin, then Taiwan Semiconductor takes their margin, then somebody else takes their margin, ASML takes their margin, then all the suppliers to ASML take their margin. So all that money kind of, all those revenues, you know, cycle through many times over. And most of that input value does actually come out as profit in that semiconductor supply chain. Again, this is that excess demand that we're talking about, you know, a year ago, where there was already a really good bet that compute was going to increase. It was going to happen anyway. But with the innovations in large language models, which shook everybody by surprise, including the researchers, I don't think any of them expected them to be as good as they really were so fast. Or to be as effective, or for that kind of transformer architecture to work across so many different modals, from vision to text, video. All this has created excess demand that wouldn't have been there otherwise, which is kind of why semiconductors have been our top pick for over a year and why it continues to be so. And it's pretty nice when you have these touch points with people in the industry making these purchase decisions that really kind of emphasize that. Another thing that's interesting, we're kind of worried, like, is there going to be pricing pressure? And at some point there will. You know, at some point, people, the way things are, people just keep investing and building out capacity until prices fall and there's an overcapacity. That will happen. And then there'll be an undercapacity again. It's not going to be the end of the world. Semiconductors are notorious for that cycle. But really said, you know, he thought that prices could come down, you know, maybe 8 or 9% a year. But at the moment, there's immense sovereign demand. And that's another new thing. Countries have been building data centers for decades. They've been building out their own capacity, but this time they want their own large language models hosted in the country on equipment they have very carefully studied for any backdoors and security risks. And that is new. You know, that this is new demand that otherwise wouldn't be there without these latest innovations. So he said that was roughly kind of 15% of what they were forecasting demand to be, but that's definitely helping in pricing. So if capacity frees up, there's plenty of buyers, not least major governments, you know, from the Middle East to India to the United States. And then you can also add up the big public government-initiated investments, which are about $200 billion. So that's another... There's two interesting aspects of this. Firstly, that certainly supports, you know, huge returns for companies that will supply to those governments where that money's going to actually go, which again consists in the supply chain of semiconductors. But also this is probably one of the ways where this thing finally unwinds in this particular cycle. I reckon this particular cycle will end because governments have excess capacity, or rather government investment leads to excess capacity, you know, subsidized plants in the EU, Japan, United States, not to mention China, you know, which has been a historic major source of demand. Or something like the Chinese semiconductor imports are bigger than German cars and bigger than Saudi Arabia's oil exports. It's been that big. It's, you know, this is a huge industry. We talk about Taiwan Semiconductor, how they're the only people that can do what they do at scale. And the reason for that is the technology is so advanced. It basically requires the entire globe's demand for semiconductors to build one Taiwan Semiconductor. The United States used to build their own chips. They used to have their own fabs. Even the United States government, which for many reasons, you know, if they could, they would. Even they can't keep up with the immense capital demands of the sector, the, you know, huge capital required and the immense technological skill to make these things. There's nothing really like that, you know, in the market at the moment. We also came across an interesting comment on C Limited. So C Limited entered Brazil. They did this massive overseas expansion, which largely they had to unwind at great expense. But one place they have kind of held their own was in Brazil. And it was interesting because it says they're focused, and this is like a comment on strategy, which isn't obvious. It certainly wasn't obvious to me until I read it. It said that they're focused on actual order quantity rather than GMV, rather than gross merchandising value. So instead of trying to maximize sales and revenue, they maximize literally the number of goods that were sent, even at, no doubt, losses in the first instances. The reason that worked is apparently this this is what gets you engaged with the app. You know, the more little things that you buy, the more you're on the app, the more you're thinking about it when it arrives, you know, 1 to 2 weeks later, because the delivery cycle is much slower with Sea Limited. Often they're shipping from China to Brazil. But really, that's what worked. And now they're at a point where they're outselling Mercado Libre, which had an immensely dominant position. You can see, actually, Pinduoduo doing the same thing. I mean, I've personally bought a bit of stuff of them. They must have lost a lot. You know, you're buying these jackets and equipment, fishing rods, that kind of thing for $5, $10 or less. And it's coming from China. I saw like really cheap wetsuits as well, like literally 90% discount on what a wetsuit will cost in Australia. But I have to say, it does kind of get you checking the app for certain kinds of things. And you're seeing these very large upgrades from Pinduoduo. Now, Chinese equities are still kind of in the dumps. They haven't recovered at all, really. Chinese equities have continued to be a disaster. This is KWEB, the China ETF. No recovery. Every rally has been a false one. And it's down from 100 to 25, so 75% fall. Then you have something like Pinduoduo, which has held its own, and that's because I think it's just performed so exceptionally well. It's actually managed a rally, a fairly significant rally off the lows, and it's one of the very few companies that have done that. And you can see that in these kind of revenue upgrades. It's also the cheapest company of its size growing at that rate. You know, you're talking about a P of 13. I know the first thing you're going to say is we can't trust anything out of China. And I guess that was as true as it was now as it was 2-3 years ago. There's no doubt at the margin this is becoming an absolute e-commerce juggernaut internationally. And they're doing the same strategy that Sea Limited did to get ahead in Brazil, which is getting order value and getting people using their app. Pretty interesting. Very interesting case study. We don't have a position in this at the moment. We might at some point. Broadly, we've stayed away from China for quite some time, ever since they came out and decapitated their organizations. Not literally in this instance, though it did seem like that was on the cards at one stage. But, you know, the founder of Pinduoduo resigned when they went after Jack Ma. I thought that was pretty smart. He's clearly a brilliant, intelligent person in a very intelligent country. But he saw the writing on the wall, and it became crystal clear from the Chinese political leadership that they didn't want any competition politically or power or otherwise from super successful tech CEOs. There's also been a few interesting things happening in biotech. You saw it was down for the year. There's so many false breakouts in that thing. But there's a lot of these companies that are still kind of zombies from 2020, 2021. So DNA, Ginkgo Bioworks, I mean, this one's always annoyed me. It's been a terrible performer, one of the worst for companies that's still somewhat alive. The reason for that is, you know, it's trouble when companies, the first page of the presentations, emphasize random things like new programs or active customers or something unrelated to profits or revenues. And they're certainly guilty of that. Like, what is a program? What what does that mean? How is that relevant? You know, it's undefined. And clearly, the more the better. So they've defined it however they want, and they're doing it so they can have at least some charts that go bottom left to top right. But you can see that, you know, the actual numbers are pretty horrific. And the reason I don't like this one, and I want to give it a hard time, is because it's one of the more egregious companies. And I know it's sucked in a lot of people who are usually like natural friends and allies of mine, because they want to invest in, you know, very technologically forward companies that are doing interesting, new and valuable things. And on the surface, Ginkgo Bioworks looks like it fits that bill, but it does not. And one of the reasons it's kind of blown up the way it has is because they paid themselves $2 billion of stock. And that is a pretty astonishing hoard. That is enormous compensation, even by the United States, even by like SPAC standards. That's astonishing. And you can see even now, having paid themselves $2 billion in 1 year, okay, $1.9 billion, $1.94 billion in 1 year, still, it's not enough. They still need $235 a year. Remember, this company, this chart's a few days old, and it's probably gone down a little bit now. It's a $2 billion company. So $2 billion company, 2022, they paid themselves $2 billion. Perhaps they should have left that value in the company. I mean, good for them, good for everybody that is there, I guess. No doubt this is the relentless selling. Every time there's a rally, you'll have insiders just hosing it. They're probably doing it regardless of whether it rallies or not, and that'd be smart too. Because this company is probably not going to last forever. You know, what was its net loss? $900 million net loss. And that's not a year. That's not the year that they paid themselves $2 billion. You can see their R&D is $432 million on very little revenue. On $250 million of revenue, their expense line is $880. So that is what is that, 250, yeah, 630 mil of losses, of economic losses, a $2 billion market cap. I know there's a lot of people that like it that don't like it when I talk about it, but, you know, those numbers speak for themselves. And we have seen precedent. This chart's a bit dodgy because Invitae, you know, it's gone down to zero, but the way this chart is structured makes you think there's still some value. So this is a company that bought Illumina machines. So a bunch of genetic testing companies were founded maybe 5-6 years ago. Yeah, 2015-16 was Invitae. Basically, they all bought Illumina machines and then offered genetic testing for various things. But they never really made any money. It was, they had similar kind of numbers to DNA without such egregious stock comp. But, you know, we're just losing 200 mil plus a year. 5, 6, 7 years later, there was just nothing left. And Illumina has had a pretty tough time as well, because all of a sudden, these new customers that were ordering their next generations are no longer there. Pacific Bio is probably the next one. Actually, this one, I think, dropped 40% last night, which is not included in this. But again, you know, $850 million company, 300 mil of revenue, sorry, 300 mil of losses, 200 mil of revenue. So 500 mil expense line to make 200 mil of revenue many, many years, you know, 12 years after founding. It's pretty hard to see a solution for these companies. And it's a bit of a trap because a lot of these super high-tech companies, their customers are basically R&D in Big Pharma, and Big Pharma spends what it spends. It's not like Big Pharma itself is growing at some crazy rate. And academic labs. And universities and academic labs are really capital constrained. They can't just spend silly numbers, and the markets are always pretty small. So if you have some fancy new technology and you're selling to researchers, it may be brilliant, it may be great, but that's a small market, and you're actually seeing that play out with a number of these companies. 10x Genomics is another one. So I think that's kind of where the market is. I think these things continue to sell off. I think software is ripped far too far. I don't think, there's still companies 20 times sales after the rally last year. There's a good reason why software is down, and I think that multiple compression continues. I also had a note on Tesla made a big move. They dropped their subscription price from $200 to $100, which is all right, but it's a bit of a bitter blow for people that just paid $12,000 for a lifetime subscription to it. I think that they had to do it, but it's clear that EV demand, regardless of what Tesla does, is going down. It's kind of saturated, and also they have new Chinese competition flooding the market with pretty good cars. And so I think the solution for Tesla, there will be time to buy Tesla, but it's nowhere near now. The longer I've been in markets, the longer the obvious thing has been the right thing to do. Maybe with the big tech sell-off, don't own too much tech. Or if all the software companies are growing at 50%, maybe buy the software companies. Or if rates are going up, maybe don't own rate-sensitive things. And the more you kind of convince yourself the otherwise, generally that's not helpful. Another example would be, okay, we know that investment in semiconductors is going to quadruple. Maybe we should own semiconductors. And I think that's where we are now. So I think the obvious thing right now is to own semis and kind of avoid the market. And if you think about what happened over the way I see the last kind of 10, 15 years is you had these companies, Microsoft, Google, Meta, Apple, you know, just harvesting dollars from everybody. They became an expense line on everybody, and they took the revenue lines of entire industries like advertising and print media, like large industries. But also, you know, Apple and Microsoft build every single corporate person. Apple build every high earning person in the West. Google and Meta harvested every internet user for advertising data that they could sell. They basically came a cost for everybody else and accrued huge value and captured almost the entire like value increase in the stock market. Now there's a new game in town. Now these companies are getting billed by these companies. The big tech hyperscalers are getting billed by the Nvidias and Taiwan Semiconductors of the world. And that is going to be, that's kind of the story of the market now. Previous winners are just not going to cut it. Software, everybody's wringing efficiencies. The companies were growing 40, 50% and are growing 15 to 20%. Everyone's trying to cut staff. Headcounts are down. Every time somebody loses their job at Google or Meta, there's probably 20, maybe even like 30, 40, 50 software subscriptions that are cancelled. Every startup that closes, all those subscriptions are cancelled. It's not a good environment for those. You know, stick to the obvious ones. These are the ones that, you know, there's clear demand increase. Apple's another one. I mean, Apple's saturated. iPhone sales stopped growing a long time ago. And the iPhone was like a very rare product that it was very high margin and everybody wanted one. Everybody wanted the new one. The upgrade cycle is clearly slowed because there's not much reason to buy it. It may change if there's AI on a phone, but I just can't. I think the form factor is the form factor. You know, it's going to be about that size. They've experimented with bigger, smaller. It's probably going to look relatively similar as it has in the past, just based on the screen size that you want. And they're also spending all their money buying back shares, which can work, which can be good. You know, if a company's growing at 15 to 20% or even 10% and buying back shares and the multiple is low, so the earnings are high relative to the stock price and you're buying back a meaningful amount of shares, that can be a big recipe for success. But I've seen it also work out disastrously. I'll give you one example. There was a company, Gilead, which I used to look at many, many years ago. So this is Gilead. They basically had cures. They got them through acquisition, but they bought them before the big ramp up in sales. They basically had cures for hepatitis and they had the best HIV medicine. It was an effective cure for HIV. Had enormous run up, you know, $20 to $100. And then they became really, really cheap. And they're buying huge amounts of stock back. I can see here that they've actually paying dividends now rather than stock. So this chart is somewhat misleading. I think, you know, you need to add 4% a year for as long as they've been paying dividends. But really, that was a trap. It was when they stopped growing, the market was saturated, and they were cheap, very cheap, like single-digit PE. It's still trading on a forward PE of 9 and buying back a ton of stock. That actually was kind of disastrous for them. And I wonder if I can see this here. Yeah, here we go. So if you look at the last 10 years, let's make it 20, you know, huge ramp up on those successful acquisitions, which were more successful than anyone could have wildly hoped for. And then 2015, 2016, the PE was the lowest. So how did it go in 2015, 16? You know, that was the peak. It then dropped and went sideways for, I guess, almost a decade now. So if you bought at the cheapest moment, you actually went down over the following 10 years. And that's with enormous buybacks, enormous capital returns. And if I had to guess, it actually wouldn't surprise me if that's the future for Apple. I mean, they're buying back a lot of stock, but their core product is saturated. And we're already spending a lot on watches, AirPods. It's trading at, you know, 25 times, but with shrinking sales. It's not really low enough for buybacks to be meaningful. It's obviously huge sums of buybacks, which are supportive of the market broadly. Because when Apple buys back stock, it goes back to the fund managers who buy something else. Let's say if your mandate's to be 100% invested, which is typically how people allocate to equities. If somebody buys back stock, somebody in the investor pool gets that cash and then allocates to something else. So it's still probably good for tech stocks, but you could easily see a world where this thing goes sideways for 5 to 10 years, you know, a mix of multiple compression and all the value that they're capturing goes to buybacks, goes to whoever chooses to sell. That could be an outcome here for Apple. I think the easy play is the obvious play, and we're positioning extensively in that direction. I might wrap it up there. I hope you found that interesting, and I will do the same thing again next week. Thank you.